You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
ParanormalNewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome from the snow-covered heart of Ohio via the kneecap of New York. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons, here on Tuesday, April 17th, 2018. And thank you for allowing me to enter your ears and touch your mind. Now, I don't normally listen to my intro. I had to kind of listen to it tonight just to kind of get me in the mood here. It's not that I need help, but and I had no idea what I was going to say. No disrespect. It just kind of came out. It just emptied my mind, and no disrespect meant to coast to coast. And obviously, you know what that music is from. And this is obviously the biggest story that I think of the year, and probably one of the top stories I've unfortunately had to ever cover in almost 10 years of doing this show. And we've talked about that have passed away, and I don't normally talk about that, and we've had a few this year that I've not talked about, some kind of minor players in the paranormal here and there. Obviously, this is a major story, and I don't care who you are in the paranormal, if you're a skeptic believer, you're a UFO person, or you're a ghost person. Everyone's talking about this story. Of course, this is about the passing of paranormal radio great and creator of Coast to Coast AM, Bell, at age 72. And he died at home on Friday, April 14th, which was that fact a little annoying to me. I was just trying to process what happened and seeing how it was affecting so many people. And people were just focusing on Friday the 13th. Big deal. And the other thing that was kind of disturbing was the Nye County Sheriff's they put out a release, and this is really basically how a lot of people found out about this, found out the truth about this, because the rumors were already swirling before this story even released. Quite a few people that were at the department's Facebook page over their announcement stating that the family had actually asked them not to release this information. But according to the Sheriff's Department, that was not actually the case. And there's really not a legal right to withhold public record. And they did give them several hours after the discovery of the body until a release was actually given to the general public. So there was no disrespect on that. It, you know, people were just emotionally charged, I think. And with, you know, good reason. It's understandable. And like I said, other reports had surfaced prior to the Nye County Sheriff's Department's Facebook post. And I had to work on Saturday, but I had heard about it before I even went to work, and spent a little bit of time at work. Shouldn't have done this, should admit it, on the air, but reading some of the stories and reading some of the posts. And I just spent a lot of time reading all this information pouring out, people really pouring their hearts out about how Art Bell affected them and how he was a catalyst for radio shows or the paranormal. And obviously, Art Bell was a man in helping kill radio fascination, where many people have attempted to use his station as a launching point for dozens of paranormal-themed radio shows. And I really admired his approach with this. And he didn't care what you were talking about. If he believed in you or not, it didn't matter to him. He'd still talk to you the same way. And to me, I enjoyed the fact that he didn't agree with everything. He wasn't just trying to appease the guest. He was just in the pilot seat. And I really enjoyed listening to that show. And it's never been this about him. I got to say that. I wasn't a huge fan of the show at it, to be honest with you. And I listen to it all that much. Every now and then I'll tune in if I know the guest or I know somebody who's going to be on the show or maybe the topic is interesting. I'll listen to some of the archives. But it's never been the same without Art. I think we all can agree on that to some certain extent. And, you know, just as the television shows with Ghost Hunters, the TV show in 2004, that ushered in the same namesake hobbyists into the field, lots of people came in because of that TV show. And, you know, you have to say that Art helped create a loyal following and even a subsequent underground of paranormal-based broadcasters in the late 1990s, which continues today. And it's also created a cult following of paranormal believers. And I meet all kinds of people all the time going to all types of different events. And even when I'm just talking to basic people about what I do, who, you know, have met me for the first time and ask me what I do and what I'm into. And you tell them that. Granted, 20 years ago, I probably wouldn't have told them that, but you know, people like Art Bell has made it easy to have these kinds of conversations with people, the general public. And it's brought a lot of people into it. And it's a very easy common ground for people to talk about the paranormal. People that aren't into it or don't really believe in it, they have heard of Art Bell and they have had heard of Coast to Coast. So it's a good icebreaker, more or less. And yes, it's also brought in a lot of conspiracy theorists, which is one of the big turnoffs for me about the show. But again, when Art was there, it was, hey, I believe it. Hey, I don't believe it. Take it as it is. And I really appreciated that viewpoint. And I mean, there's also the groups that have created their own meeting groups under the Coast to Coast banner. They're not official, obviously, but I've gotten the chance to speak at a few of these and you hear people talking about the show and different things that are going on with it. And it's really inspired a lot of people to get out there and to question all these strange things that are out there. And I've spoken, I think, at two different ones, one in Cleveland, Ohio, and one in Youngstown, Ohio area. And soon I should be speaking at another one that's going to be debuting pretty soon, hopefully. And as I mentioned, it was interesting to see all the outpouring and all the attention that this got. I mean, Josh Groban, singer Josh Groban, William Shatner, who was a guest on the show, former Jane's Addiction, Red Hot Chili Peppers guitarist Dave Navarro, and even skeptic Michael Shermer, who had also been a guest a few times, and a lot of other people, obviously in the paranormal. It seemed like everybody was posting about this or tweeting about it. Everybody shared their condolences over the passing of Art. I mean, Time, Forbes, USA Today, even AP News had a story come out within a few hours of the announcement from the Sheriff's Department. This was a major news story. This wasn't just some kooky guy out in the desert talking about the paranormal. This was a major influential person, not just in the paranormal, but also on radio. Over 500 radio stations covered this show in its heyday, at its height. And I could tell you, my local AM channel, 1100, has carried it almost since the beginning. And that's where I listen to it. And you always look forward to that. You know, when I was younger, it was always something I listened to. I remember listening to it even before I was in the paranormal. Probably made fun of it a lot, but since being in the paranormal, listened to it quite a bit. But like I said, it's never been the same since Art has left. And you know, I know a lot of people are upset about this, but, you know, realistically, we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, he was dealing with COPD, a lot of other issues, health issues in his life. So, you know, sadly, this was, you know, it's a matter of time. And not to be mean about that, but, you know, it's just sad. And you can never be prepared for something like this, no matter who you are. And I just heard word that Barbara Bush had passed away earlier today. So that's another sad moment. Heard about all that going on with her the last couple of days. And I'll tell you, with Art Bell, though, I was just talking to my producer before the show, and I'd played it again after I got finalized all my notes today. And I played this clip again, and I haven't heard it since Saturday night. And I had a hard time listening to it then, and I had a hard time listening to it today, even though, you know, I have no real connection with Art Bell. But it was very, very hard to, and probably the hardest thing about this whole entire story was listening to the live announcement on Coast to Coast with his announcement on the death of Art. It was very, very hard to listen to. And if you have not heard that, get some tissues ready, and you have to hear this. I'm going to post that YouTube link in the chat room, and you guys can listen to that at your leisure. And this is, again, George Norrie announcing live on the passing of Art Bell. And it's a tough story. I mean, it's a huge influence on a lot of people. For me, I wasn't really necessarily influenced to come on the radio for this. I'm not going to lie to you. My influences came from when I was younger. We had a lot of great radio stations here in the Cleveland, Ohio area. We had the Buzzard Morning Zoo. We had a lot of great DJs, Dancing Danny Wright, and all sorts of great people that made their mark in Cleveland. And I always wanted to be on the radio. And my best friend, who ended up moving down to Texas and went to college at Texas A&M and went to school down there for quite a while, and ended up getting a job in radio. And that's where he's been ever since, for over 20 years now. And I'm kind of jealous of him. You know, I probably make more money than him, but he loves his job and he loves being on the air, and he's darn good at it and gets to meet a lot of cool people. And I just never made that jump, never made that leap to do radio. But, you know, if, like I said, the way Art Bell just interviewed people was magical, and it was respectful at the same time. Even if he didn't believe what was going on, he still kept going. And I've had the fortunate, been very fortunate to work with quite a few people with that same kind of interviewing style that allowed that guest to do what they do. And obviously nobody of the caliber of Art Bell, but not the last you've heard of this story. Obviously, any other developments with it, and it's probably going to be, again, at the end of the year when we talk about our top stories. And with that, there's really no way to segue, but we're going to jump into cryptid news. And, well, yeah, I guess we'll just start cryptid news. I had some other stuff, but we're going to jump into the news real quick. Maybe at the bottom of the hour, we'll cover some other stuff. But Thursday morning, last week, it was a scary one in New York. Reports of a tiger on the loose had the media in a frenzy, and the public was obviously a little bit on the edge. The call came in around 8:30 a.m., and police responded quickly to the call, but apparently not as quickly as the press. The real scary thing about this entire story is the sighting of this tiger on the loose took place near 166th Street and St. Nicholas Avenue in New York City. That would put it around, I believe, in the Harlem area. And NBC News 4 responded to the area, actually, within 15 minutes, while police, and no offense, they were a little bit slower to the scene. And when police responded, neither they nor the news crew, I don't know, thankfully, but they're probably a little on edge, neither one of them could find any evidence of a tiger. Then all of a sudden, there it was. The culprit of the sighting was found within minutes. A large, striped raccoon. Not a tiger, a raccoon was found wandering the area. Christine Hauser, a reporter at the New York Times, attempted to contact the NYPD and was met with an interesting greeting. She tried to call, and this is what she got. She tweeted this. She said, quote, "Not my typical Thursday morning. When trying to confirm a report there was a tiger on the loose in Upper Manhattan, an inundated NYPD news spokesman answers phone with this line. It's not a tiger, it's a raccoon." Yeah, that's what she said. Even have a little photograph of that, the actual tweet there. I'll throw that in the chat room. So if you're not in the chat room, you're missing out on some imagery, some photographs that I'm throwing in the chat room gently tossing them in the chat room, I guess, and some of the links to some of the stories I'm talking about. But fear not, I will share those through social media, usually through Facebook. And if you goes through Facebook, it's my Facebook for the Paranormal News Insider, which is Para News Insider. It's connected to Twitter, which is at Para News Insider. So you get all that information however you want it. I know some people like Facebook. Some people don't like Facebook. I'm starting to become not a fan of it, to be honest with you. Twitter is nicer. I spend probably way more time on Twitter anymore than Facebook. But Facebook, yeah, it's an unfortunate consequence of being on social media. But it's okay, I guess. So yes, and this is not the first time. You might remember, we've talked about this stuff before, mistaken identity of a tiger. On this show, twice, I have shared stories about police being called to a sighting of a tiger only to find a stuffed animal. I mean, at least this time it was a living animal. And, you know, raccoons, you get the right raccoon, you got your hands full. Probably be better off facing a tiger, to be honest. And let me get a link to that story from NBCNewYork.com. I'll throw that in the chat room, and you can look that up yourself if you'd like. You don't want to wait a couple of days. And, yeah, people don't know the difference between a tiger and a raccoon. I don't know what to tell you. A little bit of a size discrepancy there. And we'll talk about this next story. Is a big mystery. And the mystery isn't what was seen. It's more or less, was it seen? Is the story really going to surface? And pun intended with that, and you'll figure this out in a second. It's really weird to hear about a breaking story and then never get the details. It happens every now and again, and right now we're kind of in a holding pattern with the story. And normally when I get something like this, I don't even talk about it here on the show. But the person who passed this along, I think, is credible. And I think it's worth mentioning this in case this story actually breaks and this information actually comes forward in the next couple of days, which I'm hoping that it will. And this is about, as I said, information will surface. Well, the Loch Ness Monster has its, or I guess her, she had her first sighting on March 26th. I don't know how they determine that it's a female, but anyway, March 26th of this year was the first sighting of the Loch Ness Monster, and it happened from a visitor to Scotland from Idaho. Well, that's not what we're here to talk about. Now, rumor has it that a mass sighting, meaning multiple people, has occurred just a few days ago near an area called St. Augustus. The rumor itself came from information that was passed to Lauren Coleman. And Coleman of Portland, Maine, who has authored and appeared in a number of books on cryptozoology and runs the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine. He's also on the front cover and inside of my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist. He released a tweet on April 13th that said, quote, breaking, sighting on April 13th, 2018 at Fort Augustus, Loch Ness, Scotland, of a 20-foot long, quote, something coming up, undulating, going down, then coming up again, unquote. So he's quoting somebody in this. A group of Italian tourists and a woman fainted. If that's not cool enough, allegedly, a photo was taken. Not released yet. So I added a few things in here, but essentially the email said, breaking sighting on April 13, 2018 at Fort Augustus, Loch Ness, Scotland, of a 20-foot long, something coming up, undulating, going down, then coming up again. Group of Italian tourists, a woman fainted. Allegedly, a photo was taken, not released yet. And the something coming up quote is actually a quote. It's in quotes. So somebody else said it to him. And I actually have a, yeah, I know. It surfaced. That's my joke of the day. Trying to light things up a little bit here. There it is. Got the actual picture of the tweet itself, and you can read it for yourself. Tweeted by Lauren Coleman, and I saw that, and I kind of freaked out. I'm like, wow, this could be it. This could be the sighting. But here we are. The information was passed to Lauren the day it purportedly happened, and obviously Scotland is a little bit ahead in time of Portland, Maine. Also, it obviously was could have been hours, even though it's you know, because their time is ahead a few hours. But unfortunately, no one has heard anything since. Trust me, I've been looking. I've set up like 5 different Google alerts. I haven't heard anything, haven't seen anything. I don't know what's going on. And a blogger on All Things Nessie claims that they checked with a local cruise company at Fort Augustus, but this local company at Fort Augustus has not heard anything about this particular story. But that still doesn't mean that it didn't happen. I mean, I'm waiting on pins and needles. I'd like to find out what happened here. Coleman included, he's really not, I should say, he has not included any kind of follow-up to this at all. So I don't know. This could be the biggest story on Nessie in years. And it's waiting to be heard. Hopefully we do hear something soon, because this could be huge. And hopefully, I don't think Lauren would just broadcast something like that, a breaking story from somebody he didn't trust. So this information, hopefully that person didn't get duped, but hopefully we'll find out sometime soon. Let me get the link to that story. Actually, I got the link to the blogger who talks about this. And not a whole lot with the story. It's just really, it's one of those frustrating things. You wish you had more information. And again, normally I sidestep those and don't talk about it because there's nothing to talk about. But this is one of those where the anticipation is maybe going to be bigger than the story itself. So I don't know. So let's jump. I should say, let's fly to UFO news real quick here. And you've probably seen this photograph or the scary video of this panicked passenger taking a photograph out of a window of a jet at the scary looking UFO that looks like a long plume of dark smoke. Have you seen it? Well, I was really surprised to learn that a lot of people were convinced this was definitely a UFO, or at least they're convinced that it could not have been an airplane. People were actually arguing that it was not an airplane, even when people were saying, look, that's an airplane. I don't know. Some people just like to be, I don't know. They like to believe everything, I guess. Well, what we are seeing in the video, and if you've seen the New York Post story on this, they kind of chopped it up. They played different parts of it at different times, so it's out of sequence and it's kind of switching back and forth in time with it. But I had the link to the original video. Don't worry. is that the jet they are flying in is flying by the contrail, not chemtrail, the contrail left by a jet that has flown across their flight path. And from looking at this, I'm pretty much thinking that this was the plane flew at a lower altitude. It's kind of hard to tell because this camera is all over the place, and it kind of makes you dizzy. Now, when their jet goes by, you can stare right down the line of the contrail from a higher altitude. So at the bottom is where the closer part of that contrail is, and at the top is probably a number of miles, probably 3 or 4 miles away is this airplane, if not longer. I don't know. It's kind of hard to judge the distance. So you can stare right down the contrail from a higher altitude. And I have a photo that I'll throw in the chat room so you guys can see that, what I'm talking about. It's kind of hard to talk about that. And this is pretty close to all the way down. It's not perfect, but nor am I. But you can tell this is a plume of smoke. And from that particular angle, you can tell that whatever it was below your vantage point because of the angle it's going. Think of like train tracks. When you look at train tracks, and they get smaller as they go away. And it also, if you're looking at it, it seems to be that the further distance is on top of where your feet are at. It's natural. Now, in reality, you're seeing the contrail of a jet. Again, it's miles away, with the contrail probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 miles long, if not longer. Again, it's really hard to judge the distance. And as the jet continues to fly, the people that are filming it, you can see the perspective shift to where you can see the side of the contrail. It's seen as the two jets continue to basically fly in two different directions, really essentially flying away from each other. And so here's photo number two. More smoky stuff. And there it is. And again, I'll share all this stuff. I should put it on a website. And I'll give a little link out there so you guys can check this out. Judge for yourself. I'm just telling you what I think. I don't know everything. Might act like it sometimes, but I don't know everything. I'm just giving you my perspective on the perspective and my thoughts on the subject. So the jets are so far apart that the strobes, wings, or other identifiable parts that we'd normally see of a jet, we don't see them. It's not noticeable. We can't even see a jet at all, especially because of, not just because of the angle, but again, the distance. Miles away, you're not going to see any of that stuff. Now, this is basically forced perspective on a high-altitude contrail. Now, eventually, the man films the side of the contrail, which is now probably, I don't know, 20 miles or more away at this point because, you know, these planes are flying hundreds of miles an hour or well over 300 miles an hour. So the one that you're in looking out is flying 300 plus miles an hour away from that other contrail, and that other plane is flying away from that plane at another 350. It's not adding those two together because they're kind of perpendicular. They're not parallel. They're kind of perpendicular. But then you can kind of see this whole entire side of this thing. And yeah, it's just condensation of a plane. That's what the exhaust is, what contrail is. So there you can see the side, and it's pretty obvious. The only thing that I questioned was the color of the exhaust. And initially, I don't know. I was kind of confused about the darker contrail, but I thought that was because of the angle, the light hitting it at a different angle. Plus, you have white puffy clouds in the background, which makes any other thing look a little bit darker, obviously. And like I said, the full uncut and unedited video was posted to Ken Florida's YouTube channel in its 2 minute and 46 second glory. And I'm going to have to say, sorry, no UFO over the Aegean Sea. But again, judge for yourself. Look at this video. And don't look at the New York Post one. It's so confusing. Keep going back and forth, and they have that crazy music and stuff in it. And they just picked that one off the internet. But look at the one that was originally uploaded. It's makes a lot more sense. And, well, I'll throw the link to the story in there as well. Why not? It's nice to read some stuff, too. So there you go. There's that. And we actually have a little bit more UFO news for you. This is from San Diego. A UFO sighting of a group of strange lights in the sky had residents in San Diego concerned. And multiple photos and videos flooded into Fox 5 in San Diego showing strange lights hanging in the sky around 9 p.m. last Thursday. Now, as soon as I saw the story and I read it was San Diego, I rolled my eyes and I yelled at my phone. This is a pretty heavy concentration. This area is very heavily concentrated with a military presence. There's military bases everywhere. And it shouldn't be a surprise to see these types of lights hanging low in the sky like this. But I waited. I waited to see if there was any kind of notification. And it was actually in the only story that I've seen published on it. Towards the bottom, they gave it away. And people are still passing this around as if it's a UFO. Ultimately, it was confirmed that the military was training in the area at the time in this exact area. And no, this isn't some sort of cover-up. These types of lights are always reported during training exercises like this due to flares and maneuvering planes in the night sky. This happens quite frequently. And yes, I did apologize to my phone for yelling at it when it wasn't its fault. You're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And I actually got a big announcement that I was going to make. It's kind of a somber intro, so I don't know. I just wanted to just get into the news and just start talking about the news and things, but I want to mention that yes, last night I was in the Pickaway County District Public Library, and I did a presentation on ghosts. And I went a little overtime. I was supposed to speak from 6 to 7:30, so I figured I'd go to about 7:10. I think give about 20 minutes for questions. The library closed promptly at 8, but I talked all the way up until probably about 7:45. Went a little over. We did have a lot of discussions. We did talk about Art Bell and talked about some other topics, including cryptozoology, which is weird because I was talking about ghosts. But it was a fantastic time, and saw some familiar faces there. And yeah, I saw you, and met some new people, and some great people. And it was a really interesting blend, as usually libraries are, which makes it kind of hard to prepare for. Makes it hard to talk at these things because you don't really know who is going to show up. You don't know who your audience is going to be, but I kind of enjoy that. So I try to make a little bit of a blend of history, of knowledge and information, a little bit of technical stuff mixed in with a little bit of fun. And there were a couple of kids in the audience, and there was at least one ghost investigator. One guy I talked to has been investigating since the late 1980s. So he's got me beat, and he knows his stuff. And I always keep an eye on people's faces when I'm talking about, especially when I'm going to start talking about certain subjects. One I didn't touch on this time, I kind of left it alone because it was kind of put out there as a teen and adult themed. Now, sometimes if it's an adult, maybe I'll just talk about that. But it was I didn't talk about Ouija boards. But I did talk about an even scarier subject, camera orbs. And I saw his face, and he just kind of had this little horrified look on his face. And I knew he was an investigator because I always ask the question at the beginning so I know where to dodge flying objects from if I do start bashing tools and technology and different things. So he got a little concerned when he saw the slide to orbs. But then I quickly explained how they were explainable more often than not. And caused by dust and debris. But again, a handful of people that were there were researchers, investigators. Some of them were in the UFO field, and they actually have a UFO group that meets in that library every once every 3 weeks. the third week of, I forget what day it is, but hopefully I get to go back down there and hang out with them. But it was a fun time, and I did speak too long, but some interesting questions. Not as many as I thought, but I did cover a lot of the topic. Like I said, a lot of history, and I covered a lot about cyclical research and parapsychology and ESPPK and survival, along with a lot of personal stories of my investigations and some observations of the paranormal. So I enjoyed my time there. And next month, I can't say where, and I can't say who I'm with, except for my friend Nick Smith, and I will be joining another team going to a secret location, which I can't talk about yet, to investigate for ghosts. Yeah. And it's going to be fun. I've been wanting to go to this location for quite a long time. It's maybe not a household name. It's not the big ones. I've been to Waverly Hills. I've been to Mansfield about 115 times. Love that place. This is a kind of a little bit under the radar, but I'm sure a lot of listeners have heard of this place, and I'll discuss that after I get back in the middle of May next month. And also in August, I got that flipped on my schedule here. Well, in July, I should say, at the end of July, I'll be a vendor at the Kecksburg UFO Conference. Now, I spoke there last year, as did Colin Schneider, who's the host of the Crypto Kid radio show right here on WCJVradio.com every Monday night. Well, maybe not every Monday night, most Monday nights. Just like I'm not every Tuesday night, some Tuesday nights when I feel like it. I mean, you guys are lucky enough, I guess. But he and I will be driving out together to hang out at the Kecksburg UFO Conference at the end of July. Towards the end of August, I'm going to go from ghosts to UFOs, then to cryptozoology. And I'm going to be presenting at the third annual Summers in Squatch Watch in Tyonesta, Pennsylvania. More information about that event will be coming very, very soon. Very excited about this. I've wanted to go to that event for quite a while. Then in October, I'm going to be at the UNCON 12. And UNCON stands for unconventional. It's a really unique convention idea that has a yearly theme. And this year's theme is Alien Freak Show. And I'm going to be talking about cryptozoology with a little bit of an Ohio slant to it. The middle of October, October 13th, I'll be at the Al Batwitch Festival in Columbia, Pennsylvania. Gosh, my site is all messed up. It says Ohio. It's not in Ohio. It's Pennsylvania. Then October 30th, I'll be at the Westerville Public Library once again in Westerville, Ohio. This will be my 10th consecutive year at this library. Really excited about that. And I'll be talking about Ohio cryptids and other strange creatures. I feel like I'm missing something there, but I guess that's a handful. It's a good fair amount of events, right? Well, just announced a few days ago. I mean, I'm excited for all the events I do. Trust me, I had a great time last night down there in Circleville, Ohio. And I'm looking forward to all the other events I'm going to do this year. Don't get me wrong. But I'm already excited for an event that I've already agreed to speak at for next year already. And you've heard me talk about a number of times this event. The last two times I was a speaker at this event. Didn't happen this year, but it's happened the last 2 years. That's right. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure is back, and it's going to be more intense than ever. You get it? Camping Adventure. Intense. Okay. All right. You'll get it eventually. It'll hit you later on tonight. You'll be putting your head down to go to sleep. Hopefully you're not sleeping now. And it'll hit you. It'll hit you like a ton of bricks. Well, the 2019 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure announced for May 31st through June 2nd, 2019. The first official guest was announced. Was it yesterday? Today? I don't know. It's been a blur for this thing. I'm excited about this. Jay Pachochin, who was there last year and the time before that as well. He was officially a speaker last year. Let me put it to you that way. Everybody loves Jay. He's a fantastic guy. Great to get along with. He's basically right down the road from Bray Road, which might sound familiar, or the Beast of Bray Road. So hopefully I'll get up to Wisconsin, hopefully between now and then, and do some investigating with him out in the woods. Great guy. And yes, obviously, I'm the second person that you know is going to be speaking there. There's a handful of other people. Some people haven't confirmed yet, so I can't really say. My hands are tied. I'm not allowed to say, but some great, great speakers are lined up. And even if the ones that I know are going to be there are there and nobody else shows up, it's still going to be a fantastic event. But that's not all. I almost wish you wouldn't have told me, but I like to know this stuff. Eric Altman is the guy putting this event on. He's a radio, great radio show host himself, Beyond the Edge Radio. Fantastic researcher, great guy. He's a great influence because he's very, very balanced, the same way I try to be as well. And so he and I get along very, very well because we see things just about the same way as far as investigating, researching, whatever it is, ghosts, cryptids, or whatever it is. And I really admire his passion for doing this stuff. And it's hard because he's out there in the public eye a lot more than I am. He's more well-known, and that's why I kind of like to keep a low profile for the most part. But he is putting on this event. He took this year off. He was a little burned out last year, and I totally get it. And I put my own on this year, and I don't know about next year. I'll tell you, it's a lot of work. In case you're not aware, putting on a conference, especially one like this. This is totally different than anything you've ever seen. It's, yes, you're outdoors, you're camping, and it's been really, really cold and really, really rainy. It's going to be a little later on in the year, so hopefully that will remedy itself. But this event, you're in a campground, and the speakers are all there in the campground. So you can go and visit them. You can go sleep in your tent, whatever you want to do. We're out in the woods. It's fantastic. And so being in that campground, it's a little bit of area we can lead people who are a little bit nervous maybe to go too far out, and we can lead you out there at night, talk about Bigfoot, talk about tracking, talk about the things that we're looking for, demonstrate some of the techniques out there in the woods. There's also other groups. Steve Coles took some people out last couple of years. Finally got to go out with them last year and go out in the woods, and they have all their equipment with them, and you go stalking in the night, and that was a lot of fun. We saw some really interesting stuff last year. All inconclusive, unfortunately, but again, we have a group of people out there, so we're making sure that they're safe first before worrying about running through the woods, capturing a Bigfoot or anything like that. But some interesting information that we gathered, or I should say data, not so much evidence, but it was a great time. And so you're learning from people, you're learning from researchers, you're learning from people who spend time in the woods. So this is kind of a hands-on kind of thing. This isn't just in some fancy hall where you're going to sit there in a chair and try to not fall asleep, listen to speakers, and watch PowerPoints. You're going to get that too, but sitting in your camp chair. This is a blend of a lot of great fun. And we've had the guys from the Mountain Monsters out there the last couple of years. I'm not at liberty to say, but they might be back next year. Maybe. But that's fantastic. And those guys, you know, I'm going to be honest. I don't really watch the show. I've seen a couple things, and it's a good show. It's okay. It's obviously it's over the top a little bit. But my gosh, the kids love this show. And here's Stan Gordon. And I'm next to Stan. And on my left is Steve Coles. I'm bookended by some really good researchers, awesome researchers. And, you know, Stan is the man in Pennsylvania, and Steve Coles is a very popular, very well-known researcher and investigator in New York. And here's this line of people at the table next to him talking to those guys, and nobody's talking to us. It was just kind of like, wow, I guess TV sells. that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's some potentially major announcements about who's going to be there. Hopefully we can make an announcement sometime soon, but you're going to be amazed. It's going to be, and yeah, I didn't tell Eric, I talked to him today. One thing I was worried about was actually being able to get a campsite. And I didn't worry about it the first couple of years, because as soon as they announced it, I kind of, well, I'll get a tent site. But he posted on Facebook that Benner's Meadow Run Cabins, which is the place that puts this on, it's where it's gonna take place, I should say, is they're already selling cabins, a lot of cabins, and some tent sites too. And so I was getting nervous. You know, tonight I was planning on reserving a cabin, but I talked to Eric today, and he's like, yeah, we'll make sure that happens, because I don't want to be left out in the cold or in the rain. But I like sleeping in the tent. I have no problem with it. Could have cuddled up with Jay there in a cabin, but I know some of the speakers, they don't like being out in the elements if they can handle it. If they don't, you know, they don't have to, I should say. But I don't mind it. I like it. I enjoy it. It's what I have a tent for. But I'm looking forward to this, as you can tell. And yeah, you're going to hear a lot about this between now and then. Hopefully some more major announcements about this as we go forward, and we'll talk about some of the other speakers. And it's just such a good time, and I've never had so much fun at one of these types of events, and hopefully this one will measure up to the first two. That being said, we'll come back into the news quickly here, and where are we at? Well, I guess we're at the other news. And I mean, what can I say about this next story? We've talked about it before, I guess. But it's another, I guess you could say it's a sad story, because it makes it official. It's out of my hands. There's nothing I can do. Believe me, if there was, I would do it. I would do something. Put on a cape. Steal an Infinity Stone, whatever it would have to do to help, but I can't. In short, sadly, there will not be. Well, there's not going to be a show next week. There's no other way to put it. And it's not that I don't want to do one. It's not that I don't want to be on the air. It's not that I don't want to sit here and talk to you guys for an hour. I have fun doing this. This is great. It's out of my control, because I just learned a few days ago that due to circumstances beyond anyone's control, the Earth will be coming to an unfortunate end on April 23rd. It's written. I didn't write it. I'm just reporting the news, folks. According to some experts, the Moon, the Sun, and Jupiter are going to align with Virgo, and it's going to wreak havoc on Earth, floods, volcanoes, crickets, dogs and cats getting together, all those crazy things are going to happen. But that's not all. Nope, not even close. According to David Mead, sounds familiar, right? David Mead. Yeah, I think he's the same guy that's gotten this kind of prediction wrong a few times, maybe a few dozen times in the last like 10 years or so. Well, he follows up this latest claim with this hefty statement where he said, quote, and I quote, this isn't me. I'm saying it, but I'm not saying it, if you know what I mean. So this quote, this will be followed quickly by the rise of the Antichrist, the appearance of Planet X, and World War III. 7 years of tribulation will ensure. This is beyond any shadow of a doubt, unquote. You know, I know doubt is pretty big, but I didn't know it was big enough to have a shadow. So we have this geocentric vision. So geocentric, meaning we're here on Earth, and we see this, the Moon and other heavenly bodies can create some sort of mystical power based on our vantage point here on this little tiny rock swirling around the Sun in an elliptical orbit, and our spherical planet. We're not a frisbee. even though there is absolutely no legitimacy to any sort of power created by any type of celestial alignment. I made fun of astrology last night during my presentation, and I meant it. I apologize. I still meant it. Astrology has nothing to do with anything. It's just you're assigning specific things to random events. You could do the same thing to potato chips and have the same effect. The stars have nothing to do with it. And there's never been any slight evidence. Well, I should say never been any slight evidence, but Planet X, yeah, NASA talked about Planet X a long time ago because of some measurements, movements of some of the outer planets would indicate there's probably something out there, but it's way out there. I mean, you're talking way beyond Pluto. So you're talking, if it's going around the sun, you know, its year, you know, our year on Earth is 365 and a quarter days. But this planet, it's way out there, so far out there that its year would probably be at least 2,000 or more years here on Earth. It's so far away. It's not coming closer. So this Planet X Nibiru, however you want to pronounce it, despite the hopes and schemes of people like Need, yes, I said hopes and schemes because people are making money off of this and they're fooling people and they're getting people all worked up. I feel like I'm worked up right now over this too. My goodness. People like Mead and those who think the world is just one big conspiracy and they're the only ones that can see through it and the only way they can tell us is through a YouTube channel with 10 subscribers. So after this fictional planet appears, we will then enter another world war followed by 7 years of tribulation, which will shortly thereafter, the Earth will then play host to the second coming of Christ, with the rapture occurring shortly after his world tour. And I plan on buying a shirt. Okay, probably not the best joke in the world. But anyway, Nancy Lieber, might remember her, I've talked about this before, talked about an alien implant in her head back in 2003, that had told her that the planet Nibiru was on its way to destroy us. And ever since then, there's been threats nearly every year, with some years having multiple threats. Well, it's going to happen in April. Well, maybe it's May. That's been postponed to October. And then we forget about it until a few months later. It hasn't come true yet that I know of, unless we're living in an alternate dimension or a different reality. I don't know. But of course, we can go even further back. 2003, yeah, we can go back. We can go back to 1976. That's when Zachariah Sitchin, you have him to thank for the Nibiru story, as he first wrote about it, yes, back in 1976 in a book. Don't read it. It's not worth it. Mere decades before his work made a mockery of the History Channel. So, yeah, don't worry. I'll be on the air. I'm not worried about this. Now, if volcanoes start popping up in my driveway and locusts eat through my window or whatever, I don't think it's going to happen. It's almost the end of April and it's snowing in Ohio. Nothing could get worse than that, I don't think. I don't know. I'm not worried about it. It's just another day on the calendar, and it's just another way for them to get into the news, get their attention for the week or for the month. But yeah, I'll be back. Don't worry. Same time, same sandbox, same channel. And I do have one more story here. We're going to talk about Tess. No, it's not a woman. It's the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, which is completely a mouthful, and I think they just made it up so it would be an acronym. Sounds like what a ghost investigator would do. They probably sat around for hours trying to figure out what to call this thing. Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite. Well, it actually does make sense. Now, this thing was scheduled. It was supposed to take off yesterday. And I was all excited about this. So it was perfect timing to talk about today. But unfortunately, yeah, it got scrubbed. Didn't take off, yesterday. Not going to take off today, but it's actually scheduled for tomorrow. So fingers crossed, toes crossed, eyes crossed, that tomorrow, April 18th, scheduled at 6:51 p.m. Eastern Time, supposed to launch. I'm kind of excited about this. We're gonna be talking about this satellite a lot. It's not actually just a satellite; it's a telescope as well. So, TESS will spend 2 years. That's its job. It'll last a little longer than that. But it's basically written to survey for 2 years and assist other satellites and observatories looking for new exoplanets. So this is, again, new planets circling other stars out there in space that hopefully are similar to that of Earth. And it's going to monitor more than 200,000 stars for temporary drops in brightness caused by planetary transits. In other words, if a planet passes between a star and TESS, it will notice the change in brightness and will document it for further research. Obviously, being a satellite, it's a huge advantage when looking for drops in brightness from stars. It's going to avoid the light pollution as well as the Earth's atmosphere. TESS is built by NASA. It was actually was going to be funded privately, if I remember correctly, but NASA stepped up and got this project going, and it's was one of many different projects. But this is kind of exciting. It's not a major announcement, but this is actually going to mark the first time that NASA, a NASA project, is going to hitch a ride with SpaceX, as the satellite will launch aboard a Falcon 9 rocket. And this time, there's no cars on board. I don't think so. But well, I guess we'll find out tomorrow, hopefully. Yes, TESS will join the Kepler Space Telescope in searching for new worlds. And the Kepler Telescope has done a fantastic job. And we've talked about the Kepler Space Telescope a lot. Some of the findings it's found was one of the top stories of the paranormal news last year, according to me, of course. I don't know about anybody else, but I thought it was a really big thing. We're searching for potential life out there, not just potential life, but potential habitable planets. You know, we've kind of messed this one up a little bit. Let's go find another one and take it over. Hopefully nobody's living there, because then we'll become that evil alien entity. Wouldn't that be ironic? And this follows a little bit ahead of another big event that's going to happen in 2 years. So I guess the key with the with TESS here is that these observations it's going to make will help create a kind of a focal work for the new King of the Sky that's going to be launched sometime, hopefully. And I say hopefully kind of angrily, because it was supposed to be a lot earlier than that. It keeps getting delayed, but that's what you get with telescopes. In 2020, with the long-awaited, yes, I'm still waiting, for the James Webb Space Telescope, the best thing to be launched in my lifetime. Hopefully there's something after that in my lifetime, but so far, this is going to be the best thing. This was delayed just last month due to a sun shield malfunction, which occurred during testing. And all was going well, and I kept reading about how all is going well. And I was like, don't say that. You're going to jinx it. And sure enough, they had a malfunction, and they had to redesign and redo some of this part of this sun shield, and it didn't retract correctly and all this other stuff. So the James Webb Space Telescope will have a collecting area about five times as large as the Hubble Space Telescope, with about half the mass. So it's half the weight, half the mass to it, essentially, and we'll collect about five times as much data, and hopefully it'll have 99% less problems than Hubble had. Yeah. So the job for TESS is to collect more information on potential locations for further follow-up by other observatories and other satellites, including the James Webb Space Telescope that will hopefully, again, launch in 2020. We'll see. I mean, what'll be, 64 by then? I don't even know. They better launch it quick. Now, according to sources, the mission overview is, quote, designed to carry out the first spaceborne all-sky transiting exoplanet survey. It is equipped with four wide-angle telescopes and associated charge-coupled device, CCD detectors. Science data will be transmitted to Earth every 2 weeks. Full-frame images with an effective exposure time of 2 hours will be transmitted as well, enabling scientists to search for unexpected transient phenomena, such as the optical counterparts to gamma ray bursts. TESS will also utilize a guest investigator program, allowing scientists from other organizations to use TESS for their own research. This will allow an additional 20,000 celestial bodies to be observed, unquote. So TESS will photograph an enormous amount of the sky and focus on the brightest stars in the sky. It's going to have kind of an elliptical orbit around the Earth. It's going to go out, I think they said, as about as far out as the moon is, which is pretty darn far. And this is going to be out beyond the Van Allen radiation belt in order to avoid radiation contamination. And then, again, on an elliptical orbit, when it gets closer to Earth, that's when it's going to transmit its data to Earth. It's a little closer. And this process is going to take about 2 years. And it's going to cover about 400 times more area than the Kepler mission, which, again, did a fantastic job with its coverage. And, yeah, an exposure time of 2 hours. So the camera, when it takes a picture, that lens is open for 2 hours. But, you know, it's in space. So it's going it'll really be able to tell any kind of changes in light in that time span. Really, when you're talking about space, that's kind of really quick, in all honesty. But you don't want it open for days, obviously, because it's attached to the Earth. So it's going to be moving. But, you know, with that distance, you're not really going to see too much changing. But it's exciting, and I'm into that stuff. I know, maybe you don't care, but this is looking at exoplanets, and this is kind of a major deal in astronomy right now, as it should be. And this is, again, bordering on potentially finding life out there, because we sure know there's not a whole lot of intelligent life down here. Yeah. Yes. And when I pass away, I want to be launched into space. Yeah. And I also want to take a bunch of flat Earth people with me that are alive. So there's my final article there in the chat room. And again, don't worry. I'll be passing all that information on to you guys during the week if you're not live in the chat room and you're listening in to some other way. And I appreciate you doing that. I really do. I've tried to set it up to where you guys can listen to as many different types of things you want, whether you like iTunes, whether you like Podbean, or any other type of place. I know we all have our favorites. So that's I've tried to do that through my own resources, through publishing my show on my own. And luckily, I work with a radio station here that allows me to do that. It doesn't take complete control of my show, but they also publish all of the other shows on this network through their own sources that you can also pick up all that information on as well, which is great because it all kind of works together and we kind of helps each other out with that. So hopefully you listen to not just this show, but all the other fantastic shows on WCJV. And with that, you'll hear me next week. Don't worry about the end of the world. Even if it does come to an end, I'll be here. I'll broadcast from space. However I have to do it, I'll be here. So you'll hear me next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. Never give up the chase. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.